Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. And now to a voice from the conservative opinion pages. British physician Anthony Daniels wrote a column for the Wall Street Journal late last week that argues that would-be radicals are being appeased, his word, in Britain. His piece is titled Terror and the Teddy Bear Society, and he joins us this morning from Bridge North, England. And Anthony, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you.
I should say that anyone who is looking for your column will find it under your pen name, Theodore Dalrymple. Why is it that you use a pen name, by the way?
I used a pen name because I started writing as a doctor many years ago, and 25 years ago or something like that, and I needed a pen name partly as a disguise for what I was writing at the time.
All right. Well, you argue in this column for the Wall Street Journal that British society is making too many concessions to the extremists within the Islamic faith that are in the UK, and you say they're making these concessions even before they're being asked for. Well, give me a specific example of that.
Well, for example, I did actually say that I didn't know whether they'd been asked for, and I probably wouldn't be able to find out whether they'd been ever asked for. But, for example, there is a room set aside in Birmingham Airport for wudu. That's the ritual washing before prayer in the Birmingham Airport, where there is no such facility for anybody else. And there are women-only, or there were women-only tables in the public library, which were clearly intended for Muslim women only. And in my experience, which was considerable, of Muslim girls who had been taken out of school illegally by their parents, the school inspectors never tried to get them back, though they did try to get others back who, for some reason, didn't attend school.
I want to ask you about the school thing in a moment, but I want to come back to what you said about the room at the airport. What's really wrong with making an accommodation for anyone who needs it? I mean, I've been to plenty of airports where there are rooms for mothers who are nursing. I don't have a problem with that.
Well, it's if there were other rooms for other religions, and if it were customary to have such rooms, that would be fine. But there isn't.
Well, there are chapels in plenty of airports.
No, there are not. No.
Yes, there are.
Now,
there's a chapel in our airport.
There are not chapels there. Well, I don't know about your airport, but in our airports, there are rooms which are set aside for religious people or contemplate. They don't even call it religion, actually. They call it, I've forgotten what the term is, but it's some sort of contemplation or something like that.
Well, all right, let's not say airports, let's say hospitals. There are plenty of chapels and other rooms for other religions set aside in a place like a hospital. What's wrong
not
with
anymore,
that?
Not anymore in England. There are not specifically religious chapels or specifically Christian chapels.
And so your problem with this is what?
Well, that it's turning Islam into the major religion.
Where's the evidence beyond setting aside a room that it is turning Islam into the major religion of the UK?
Well, there's evidence, for example, that the police for many years refused to investigate child abuse on a massive scale in places like Rotherham and Oxford. And this is beyond dispute.
You're a scientist, which is why it surprises me to hear you make a sweeping statement like they're turning Islam into the major religion in the UK. You don't have any scientific proof for that, but you're making these sweeping statements that
I see. Well, perhaps a major dominant or dominating in a way that other religions are no longer dominant. And after all, it isn't traditionally an Islamic society. If they were making similar concessions to Buddhists or Sikhs or Jews or Christians, or if it was necessary to do so and it was accepted, that would be one thing.
But if there isn't anything like that. If there were rooms set aside in, let's say, Heathrow for the Sikh religion, you'd have no problem with that.
Not if it were done with for every other religion that wanted it. But there is, of course, another very important thing about the Sikh religion, and that is that it is not an evangelical religion with the idea that everyone is naturally a Sikh, which is actually the fundamental idea of Islam, that everyone is born a Muslim.
The title of this piece for the Wall Street Journal is Terror and the Teddy Bear Society, and your implication there is that there's too much comfort given and pandering to people of the Islamic faith. Do I have that right, or are you more concerned specifically about the extremists within that faith?
Well, I think a little bit of both. It always turns out, of course, that many of the terrorists are known about by the police and by the security services before the terrorist events. But if you think of it as if you think, for example, of extremism as the end of a spectrum or a normal distribution, you can move the normal distribution in one direction or the other. So if you move the normal distribution towards one end, you get more of a certain kind of extremism.
So the assumption that you're making is that people within the Islamic faith would be extremists, or other people that observe the Islamic faith are being coddled. Is that right? Is that what you think?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
I said it seems to be what you're saying here this morning is that people who are adherents to the Islamic faith and would be extremists within that faith are being coddled by British society.
Well, they're being not coddled, but being encouraged, or not certainly not very discouraged.
Why should people of Islamic faith be discouraged at all? That's not the role of the state to do that, is it?
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
Why should the state step in to discourage people of the Islamic faith who just want to live, go about their business and live their lives?
If, for example, they're breaking the civil code with their Sharia courts, then there is a reason. If, for example, they encourage extremism or don't discourage it, I'm afraid we have to be interested in what is going on.
Do you have any indication that the rule of law in the UK is under some kind of threat from Sharia law? Where's your evidence for that?
Well, we certainly know that there are Sharia courts operating. That is beyond doubt. We know in Rotherham that there were thousands of episodes of sexual abuse which the police did nothing to investigate, even though they knew it was going on. In my own experience, I know that there are girls who are not, that their parents are not investigating for keeping them away from school. In Birmingham Airport, In the ladies' lavatories, my wife reported this, there are notices telling girls that they may call the police if they feel that they are being taken back and married by force in Pakistan.
That seems like good law enforcement, doesn't it?
Sorry?
Doesn't that seem like good law enforcement?
No. Well, it's not effective, of course, because often the girls have their mobile phones taken from them, so they can't actually phone. I know from clinical experience of many of my patients, and I'll give you the example of of girls who are taken back and forcibly married to Pakistan. What happens to them, and I've had many, many cases of this, they're taken back to their villages of origin, the parents' origin in Pakistan. They are given the passport while they are going through immigration at both ends, both in Britain and Pakistan, mm-hmm. and they're removed immediately afterwards.
Dr. Daniels, I just want to tell you that I don't think that there's going to be anybody who is going to listen to this interview and say, and what's wrong with that? The law in the UK opposes that, makes that a criminal offense.
Yes.
I don't think most of the people who are living under that rule of law in the UK, whether they're of Islamic faith or not, believe that what you've just described is acceptable. I don't understand an argument.
Well, it's very widely acceptable.
I don't understand why that's an argument for you.
Can you just hang on a moment? It's very widely accepted in the community of from which these girls come. And in fact, it's enforced by violence. I know this, again, from my clinical experience of these girls.
Dr. Daniels, let me ask you a larger question here. Isn't part of the problem with the very kind of radicalism that you're describing is that people feel disengaged? They feel apart from the society that they're living in. And what you're describing about, well, they shouldn't have special rooms at airports, or, you know, some of these people in the community are trying to live under Sharia law. Isn't the way to handle that more of an engagement and not an ostracization?
No, they're ostracizing themselves. It's not that we're ostracizing them. If you look at the way other groups have integrated, there is no problem. There is no problem with Buddhists, there's no problem with the Sikhs, there's no problem with the Hindus, there's no problem with the Chinese. Why is that?
So you're saying that the idea, the right way to approach some of these concerns that you've raised in this column in the Wall Street Journal and with me this morning is to do what?
Well, I think we have to examine some of the internal problems of Islam itself and its fundamental presuppositions.
But in the day-to-day accommodation of people who are living in the UK and practicing Islam and living under the rule of law of the UK, what do you do about that? Are these people that should be under suspicion as well?
Who? Which people?
People who may practice the Islamic faith but are living under the rule of law in the UK.
Well, it depends how they're behaving. But I don't see that there's any reason to pander to their demands, if they've even made them. As I said in the article, I don't know that they actually made these demands or even requested them.
Dr. Daniels, I appreciate the time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Anthony Daniels is a physician in the UK, and his column titled Terror and the Teddy Bear Society ran in the Wall Street Journal.
Looking for a new podcast? I'm Tracy Mumford, a producer for NPR News. I'm part of the team working on 74 Seconds. It's a new podcast that looks at the shooting death of Philando Castile by Officer Geronimo Yanez. It happened last summer in Falcon Heights, Minnesota. Yanez is now facing charges in Castile's death. 74 Seconds looks at what happened that night and what happens now when a police officer goes on trial. Reporters John Collins and Reham Fashir will walk you through this case as it unfolds. It's a story about race, policing, and justice in America. Subscribe to 74 Seconds wherever you get your podcasts.